afternoon, and welcome to iWolfs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show hosted by Dr. Ian Dunbar. iWolfs is proudly sponsored by Premier Pet Products and the Kong Company. In this hour, Dr. Dunbar will help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view. Now here's your host, Dr. Dunbar.
Hi, this is Dr. Dunbar's iWolfs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show to help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. So it's hello from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Hello from Dune. Hello from Claude. And hello from Ollie. And the topic this week is pulling on leash. Pulling on leash is it's a huge problem for many dog owners. And they try and solve the problem by often using all sorts of corrections, buying all sorts of specialized leashes, collars, halters, harnesses. In reality, leash pulling masks the real problem. What would happen if you didn't have a leash? You probably wouldn't have a dog either, right? It really accentuates the fact that the dog doesn't have a strong and reliable attraction to his owner, especially when outdoors. And this really is the problem that we want to focus on. When we buy specialized leashes and collars and halters and harnesses and what have you, we need to know how to use them properly. So many people misuse these. They just put them on and off they go. And so now this device is going to become a crutch for life. So the way that having a dog walk on leash is one of the most complicated things actually to teach a dog. And the way that we teach it, serious puppy training, is kind of back to front from most other trainers, that the first thing we teach is we teach the dog to follow off-leash. Basically, without this, you have nothing. Unless that you can get that dog to follow you when he's off-leash, then I'm not going to allow you to put the leash on because it's going to be pretty ugly because the dog doesn't want to be there. So that's the first exercise, and we need to do this in an area that's safe, where we can contain the dog and the dog won't get into trouble. Once now the dog can follow the owner, we're now going to teach the dog to heel off leash, which is surprisingly easy using lure reward training. That teaching heel is a completely different process once the dog has already agreed, yeah, I want to be there. I like my owner. I want to walk by their side. Now we use lures to teach the dog the precise position of healing, and we teach them that we don't just want you to be close, we want you to be, say, on our left-hand side, with your shoulder absolutely level with our legs. Once the dog can now follow off-leash and heel off-leash, then we just put the leash on the dog and we heel it on-leash. This is really simple. Then we teach the dog to walk on-leash, where now we have him on leash, we let him range up to 6 feet, he's allowed to sniff, to pee, he's allowed to stop. And so the dog realizes, you know, the difference between walking on leash and heeling on leash. You want to alternate the two. Usually the way I do it is every time we cross a street, we heel, sit, heel, bum, 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 sit. Walk on, and then the dog can walk up the sidewalk lazily. But if we're not crossing streets, then periodically on the sidewalk, sit, heel, about turn, fast, slow, sit, okay, walk on. So the dog knows that when we're heeling, it's for very short periods, usually no more than 40 yards at the absolute maximum. And then it's going to be casual. We're walking on leash again, and the walk is for you. When we're walking on leash, you are allowed to stop and sniff and pee and poop. And this is, you know, what it's all about. So before we start, I think it's good, again, to look at the dog's point of view. And little Grasshopper he's still learning, and he's certainly learned about walking on leash. Hi, Theo, a wise Akita. Guess what I learned the other day? A tight leash is like a telegraph wire. If I forge ahead and keep the leash really tight, I can sense everything the owner is about to do, and so then I don't need to pay attention and can look and sniff around. Well, Grasshopper, I don't think that's altogether a brilliant idea. I mean, sometimes owners know best. And if you totally ignore them, it may take the joy out of their walks. You're so right, Sensei. Just the other day, I got really worried. I was towing my owner down the sidewalk, and all of a sudden she stopped dead in her tracks. I mean, it worried me. I thought, oh dear, she stalled. Then we were just standing there like statues. I tried everything I knew to start her up again. I tried everything. I pulled harder, yipping, barking, pawing, goosing, circling. Nothing worked. But then I sat, and bingo, she comes to life, and off we go again. Who would have thought that all I had to do was sit? Boy, my owner is so simple. She's just like a golden retriever. All I have to do is sit, and she'll do anything for me. She opens doors. How polite. She drives me to get frozen yogurt, gives me tummy rubs and neck massages, and cooks and serves me dinner. She's so simple. All I have to do is sit. Well, Grasshopper, I don't think she's really so simple. I think she's training you. Wow, do you think so? Wow, that's so cool. And Grasshopper, I think at long last, you have taught her to train you. You are really learning well. So Grasshopper here, of course, learns how to train his owner to walk on leash. And this will be one of the major methods that we use to work with our dogs. So let's start off with off-leash following. This to me is the absolute foundation of all obedience. Once we know we have a dog that has a good temperament and likes people, then the foundation of teaching manners is, does the dog want to be close to you? And this is so, it's so important, because if we use devices to make the dog stay close, it makes it even worse. I mean, I think, you know, we got some good human analogies here with children, or girlfriends and boyfriends. That the more you try to get them to be close, the more then they want distance. What we got to do is to teach them to want to be close. And the way we do that, of course, is we gently move away from them. You cannot get a dog to follow unless you go anywhere. I mean, that's so basic. And certainly if you stand still or you go after the dog, he won't follow. And this is important, because if you watch a person with a dog off leash for the first time, and you say they have a 15-week-old Papillon or something, and you say, okay, I want you to get the dog to follow you around the room. What you find is the owner says, come on, pup, let's go. They take about 4 steps forward, then they stop, because the pup is not following them, and they say, puppy, come here. And they put their hands on their hips, like a perfect standstill, and they come here. Then they pirouette, because they've lost the puppy, he's wandering off somewhere. Then they go back to the puppy. And it's very interesting here, because all the puppy has done is ignore the owner, maybe stood still, maybe wandered off in a different direction, and they have trained the owner to do a send out, a standstill, a pirouette, and then a perfect recall. So you have to keep moving to get the puppy to follow you. That the basic rules of open field following are, keep moving away from your dog. It's as simple as that. Keep moving away from your dog. Whatever your dog does to improvise on the following, then accentuate the mistake. You stretch that bungee cord and let the dog know, wow, you really are behind now. It's human nature, though, to try and cover up for the dog's mistake. I remember seeing a lady in obedience, oh, this is so long ago, and she had a little miniature dachshund, and it was during the off-leash healing, and she's walking at normal speed, and the dachshund, of course, he's got his nose to the ground. I mean, he's not healing, he's tracking, you know. And then the judge says, fast. And this lady, she starts moving her legs faster, but she's actually walking slower. It's like she was moonwalking backwards, and it ended up the two of them standing still, because what she was doing was trying to cover up for the dog's mistakes, whereas if she had really taken one big step and then sped off and maybe coughed and lost a couple of points, you know, for using a second command, the little dog would have come flying into her as we stretch the bungee cord. So these off-leash following exercises, it's the absolute foundation. We call them centripetal exercises. Does the dog want to be close to you? You have to be the sun and the dog is the planet. I mean, you are the dog's everything. As opposed to, say, a centrifugal exercise where the dog's pulling on leash and you cut the leash and whoosh, the dog's in the next county. The open field following exercises, the great places to practice them are or in a tennis court, it's fenced, or if a friend has a big yard, and basically whatever the dog does, you do the opposite. If the dog lags, you speed up. If the dog goes on ahead, you about turn and speed up. If the dog goes left, you go right. If the dog goes right, you go left. Always as you speed up, look to your left side for the dog, and that's the side the dog will appear. Don't look right and then left, otherwise it'll end up on the wrong side. There's a time-specific following exercise you really want to do, say with a 3-month to 4.5-month-old puppy, and this is where you drive him to a nice park, miles away from traffic, you park the car, let him off leash, and you walk on a trail. And most puppies on trails, most dogs on trails, in effect, most breeds, will stay on the trail. It's very few breeds that will dash off into the brush and the undergrowth, because, of course, all the smells are on the trail. That's where all the footsteps are and all the urine. So either the dog is too far ahead or too far behind. If the dog's too far ahead, you set a distance, I would say 10 yards. And if he gets farther than 10 yards, you just turn around and walk back the other way. The puppy will soon notice and go, oh, wow, my owner's 25 yards away from me, and will run after you. Because, you know, the puppy may be pretty confident at home now, but we're in an unfamiliar area. And the only thing the puppy knows there is you. What you're trying to do here is to hide from your puppy. I think I have a beautiful bit of footage on one of my videos, I think dog training with Dunbar, hiding in bushes, where we walk, once we get away from the dog, we hide in a bush, and the dog's lost us. And we're actually going to panic the dog a little. And the dog, he notices that we're gone, he then goes back up the trail, he's a bit stressed, and we all go, puppy, puppy, just so he knows we're still there, but very staccato so he can't localize on us. Eventually the dog will find us and be so relieved. This dog will be hard to lose again. I did this with Phoenix just once. From the rest of her life, she would never go round a corner on a trail without looking back at me and waiting for me to catch up. She would never walk ahead of me without having one ear turned back on me, because it's kind of like she had learnt, boy, you know, my owner is really stupid. I mean, take your eyes off him for a second and he gets lost. I really have to watch him all the time. So it's a very time-specific exercise. Usually once dogs are over 5 months, it doesn't work so well, because now the dog is much more confident outside walking around and what have you. You can also do following courses in classes and at home. At home, try and get the dog to follow you around the living room couch, up the stairs, into one bedroom, into the bathroom, downstairs, through the living room, around the dining room table, into the kitchen, around the dining room table, or doing, you know, like serpentines, weaving poles in between chairs. It's actually very difficult to do that. The smaller the space, the harder it is to get the dog to follow you. But you want to make sure that without a leash, that you can get the dog to follow you. It's absolutely the basics of training. In class, we set up courses with little, you know, red traffic bollards, and we set up gates, kind of like skiing gates, and the owners have to get the dogs to follow around this course. And usually we have all owners doing it at the same time. And, you know, maybe week two in class now, at each gate they have to sit the dog so that it's not mayhem with dogs running everywhere. So you have to get the dog to follow you to the next gate and sit. Okay, it's time now for a quick break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Do you want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Check out the newest products in Premier's Busy Buddy line. The Bouncy Bone combines rubber, durable nylon, and replaceable rawhide rings for extended playtime pleasure. Fill Tugger Jug with treats or kibble, and your dog will be regularly rewarded while playing fetch or tug or just rolling it around on his own. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer. And be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Twist and Treat, Squirrel Dude, and more at Premier.com.
Looking for the world's most versatile and durable dog toy? The Kong Company established the standard for dog toy performance and durability. The legendary red rubber Kong toy is recommended by the world's top veterinarians and dog trainers. A tree-stuffed Kong toy is the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. Kong toys are available at pet stores worldwide. Get your Kong today. Your dog will love you for it.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolves. So before the break, we were talking about getting the dog to follow you. This is the absolute basics of off-leash reliability. It's actually the basics of all training. Once the dog wants to be by your side, everything becomes much easier. It really helps, I think, to give you a human analogy. If you think of training a dog, and especially getting a dog to follow you, to walk on leash, to heel, pretty much the same as things that you would do with your child or your girlfriend, boyfriend, or spouse. The two great analogies are, say, you go skiing with your kid, or you go outside and you throw the football back and forth. You know, you don't have your kid handcuffed when you do this. You say, hey, do you want to go out and toss the football? And they say, yeah. Why? Because it's something they want to do. And following the owner should be something a dog should want to do. When you're out at a party with your spouse, you don't just say, dance with me now, and put a metal leash over her neck and give a yank, you know, or jerk her on a necklace or something like this. It's like, you know, would you like to dance, hon? Oh, yeah, wow. Whew. And it's something she wants to do, or something he wants to do. And it's something we do together. And that's basically what healing is. It's an exquisite choreography that we do with our dog. And we walk by each other's side. And for me, nothing really points out what training really is. Training is not dominating the dog's will and thinking that the dog's trying to dominate us and so being nasty to the dog and making his life a misery and inhibiting every little bit of exuberance in the dog. It's doing things together. Does the dog want to walk by your side? So let's test this off leash. We can do it at home. And you can actually do these off leash exercises on leash. You can put the leash on the dog and you can drape it around your neck or tie the leash to your body. The important thing here is your hands are off the leash, because if your hands are on the leash, you will use it as a crutch. And then you can practice the following exercises and see that, you know, the leash remains attached. And then you really have to use your energy, like, pop, 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 you know, if you feel like the leash is going to slip off your neck. And you learn these skills of getting the dog to pay attention to you and that you are actually worth following, that you are exciting. Things happen. It's no good saying, okay, puppy, let's go, follow me. I mean, you know, the puppy will just fall asleep. You've got to do things like clap your hands. You've got to pop, 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 make noises. Woohoo, pop, pop, stuff like this. Silly noises and get the puppy focused in on you. A little thing that also will help is having lures. Obviously in very basic training, we can use our food lure. However, I would just try and phase these out as soon as possible. And I would just change to some kind of interactive lure, our fetch toy, our tug toy again. It's amazing, isn't it, how every episode we come back to this. And the reason is that when you play fetch with a dog, or you play tug with a dog, you suddenly have a much higher level of reliability when the dog is off leash. And the dog has learned so many rules, because the games of fetch and the games of tug have lots of rules. And so we've learned these, you know, rules about the game, and so it's then much easier for the dog to learn rules about life. So we're now going to teach the dog off leash heeling. And this, of course, is heeling and sitting. Eventually, we want the dog to walk by our side. You can actually choose the side. The American Kennel Club, most kennel clubs have the dog on the left-hand side. But if you want the dog on the right for any reason, that's okay. I actually teach the dog on the left for heeling, because that's the way I do it, and it's easier for me to teach that way. We want the dog to heel by our side, to speed up if we speed up, to slow down if we slow down, to turn if we turn, and to sit automatically if we stop. Depending on the type of dog, if we've got a small little active dog, I will use what I call the Paquito principle, and this was actually named after a dog I had in puppy class who was so wired, it was ridiculous. You could not take two steps without losing this dog, so we didn't. We went heel, one step, sit, as quickly as that. So we'd get the dog in sit position, get a bit of food on his nose, then left hand on his nose with some food, and we'd go heel and immediately sit with the right hand. So it's like one step, sit. One step sit. And each time we sat, it was like, whew, wow, that was an effort. And then after a while, the dog learnt one step sit, it became a little calmer, so then we'd do two steps and sit, then three steps and sit, four steps and sit, five steps, eight steps, 10 steps, and so on. But you want to think of healing in segments, and that you sit. And that's the time when you can take a breather. The dog's sitting by your side, and it just allows you to relax just a little bit more. I much prefer, as I say, using an interactive lure, say, let's use a Kong that we've been using for, you know, fetch and tug. And so we're going to have the Kong in our right hand, sit the dog, then we put the Kong in our left hand, and we waggle it in front of the dog's nose, and off we go. Healing now in a long straightaway, a dead straight line. Walk as quickly as you can. The faster you walk, the closer the dog will stay to you. If you walk slowly, then the dog can serpentine and sniff and amble. So waggle that Kong, keep it moving. Keep moving the Kong from the dog's nose up to your face so the dog gets used to looking up at you. And then you're going to get ready to sit the dog. So transfer the Kong to your right hand and put your right hand right out in front of you and then move it towards the dog in a sit signal. Say sit, give the sit signal, and stop with the dog by your side. So we're going to start with long straightaways. Sit, long straightaway, sit. Then we're going to turn in place. And so we're going to put the lure again right down on the dog's nose, and we're going to turn in place. Boom, 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 boom. And you just do a turn in place, 180 degrees, and then heel. Off you go, a long straightaway again, heeling in a dead straight line, walking as quickly as possible, and then sit the dog. So turn in place, long straightaway. Turn in place, long straightaway. Then we're going to try turns in motion. And basically, whether we turn right or left, it's slightly different. That with the dog on the left-hand side, if you turn left, you're going to bump into the dog. We don't want that. And so what we do is we take a longer step than usual. And this signals to the dog a change is coming. Either we're going to stop or we're going to make a turn. We take a big long step and then you move the lure backwards. So now the dog is lagging a little. Then you make your left turn or your left about turn. And this way you can move around the dog without bumping him with your knee. With a right turn, you do the opposite. That you take the long step and then you move the dog a little bit forward, because as you turn right or a right about turn, you're sort of taking the inside track and the dog has to orbit around you. The dog has a longer route to go, so you want him a little bit ahead of you. And always after a left turn, slow down after the turn, because the dog will likely be ahead of you after a left turn, so slow down to accentuate that he's too far ahead. Conversely, when you're doing right turns, after you've done the right turn, the dog is now probably lagging a bit because he has to take the longer route. So speed up immediately after a right turn. And then when you now walk at a normal speed, the dog will be turning really nicely and he always keeps by your side. Even though the dog has to vary speed, he has to slow down for left turns and speed up for right turns. Very important thing to teach is slow down, speed up. There are so many behavior problems, as we've learned from my program, they aren't behavior problems, they're just behaviors we find inappropriate or downright annoying. And some of these are the dog is moving too fast or moving too slowly. You see this with walking on leash, the dog's either forging or lagging. You see it in recalls, the dog's coming too slowly. We must put speed up and slow down on command. Again, we're putting the problems on cue. The way we do this is walking, and we can do it on leash or off. We're walking in a dead straight line, and we say hustle, and then we speed up. And the dog thinks, wow, when they say hustle, they just go, they accelerate. Boy, I'm just going to accelerate when they say hustle. And then when we say steady, we then slow down. Now, you've got to get the timing right. You give the instruction before you change speed. Okay, I'm going to repeat that. You give the instruction, then you change speed. Otherwise, if you change speed, the dog won't hear the instruction. Selective attention, the change of speed, your body language will mask the instruction. This is a really useful behavior. So now we got the dog to heel off-leash. He's doing a good job. I say he needs a reward, so let's have a game of tennis tug. Tug of war is just a brilliant reward for heeling, because what dog is going to let you walk away with him when you've got his toy? It's just so brilliant, and it's really brilliant for dogs which aren't motivated by food. So very quickly change from food lures and rewards to a fetch toy or a tug toy when you're teaching following and heeling. Well, now all we got to do now is just put the leash on the dog, and he heels. Actually, he doesn't, and this is a funny thing. As soon as you put the leash on the dog starts to get sloppy. And the reason here is that when we train the dog off-leash, getting the dog to follow off-leash and to heel off-leash, the owner had to be, really had to pay attention. You know, you put the leash on, now the owner relaxes, the dog senses this, and the dog relaxes. So when you put the leash on, pay attention. Pretend the leash isn't there. So generally what I do is I put the leash around the owner's neck, just drape it over their shoulders, or I tie the leash to their belt. So they've still got to keep this dog close. They can't jerk on the leash. Now we're going to teach the dog to walk on leash. The dog now knows to follow us. The dog knows to heel in heel position. And the dog looks pretty snazzy. Now we say, okay, walk on. And really accentuate your gamboling along now. It's a really casual gait. And you stop and you walk slowly. And you're trying to lure the dog and tell him, yeah, now you can sniff and pee. That's okay. And good boy. There's a good boy. Then you say, Rover, heel. And he has to sit at heel. Then quick, step, and sit again. And then, okay, walk on. So you really accentuate the difference between really snazzy, fast-paced heeling, heel, about turn, left turn, right turn, hustle, slow, quickly, slowly, about turn, left turn, sit, and then walk on. And you amble along, and the dog can decide the pace. All right, and the pace is now time for another break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar. As a veterinarian and animal behaviorist, people often ask me which toy is best suited for their canine companion. Without hesitation, I have recommended the durable and versatile Classic Kong toy. The Kong toy is known as the original canine treat and food dispenser. Simply stuff a Kong toy with any healthy dog food or treat, and you have the perfect training tool. A foodstuff Kong toy will stimulate your dog mentally, reduce frustration and anxiety, and ensure your dog is chewing on something other than your sofa. Find quality Kong products at pet stores everywhere. Your dog will love you for it.
Want to keep your dog busy with good things to chew? Premier's Busy Buddy treat-holding toys are the answer. Each one is designed to hold a different type of treat, providing hours of entertainment. Squirrel Dude features the patented treat meter, randomly dispensing kibble as your dog plays. The Big Kahuna Football includes the patented treat trapper, ideal for hard biscuits and intense chewing pleasure. Ask for Busy Buddy at your local pet store, veterinarian, or trainer, and be sure to check out all the other great Busy Buddy toys, including Waggle, Bouncy Bone, Tug-a-Jug, and more at Premier.com.
Conversation at a click of a mouse. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolves. And we've been talking about the four-step process to teach a dog to walk on leash. Firstly, by checking that the dog wants to follow us off leash, and then we teach him the specific heel position to heel off leash. Then we put the leash on. Now we heel him on leash, and then we teach him to walk on leash. And this is the time when now the dog can dictate the speed of the walk. He can sniff and pee, he can stop. Or alternatively, you know, the owner can say, come along, you know, informal commands, or hustle, you know, or steady, that they can dictate it too. But the point is, walking on leash should be enjoyable. It should be enjoyable for the dog, and it should be enjoyable for the owner. For the owner, I would say the enjoyable thing is that the dog doesn't irritate them. And for the dog, one of the most important thing is we get to sniff a lot. I mean, that's what it's about. I always thought, actually, of one of my dreams is to have a destination resort for dogs, and that the dogs come to this resort, and one of the things they have is olfactory dog walks. It's like a theme park for dogs, and the owner can choose the walk and say they have an urban walk. And they walk this little, you know, course, but the course has all these olfactory stimuli on it. It has, you know, little air puffers that blow out air, which are scented with, say, you know, 2-day-old pizza, old hamburger wrappings, cat poop, and what have you. Or alternatively, they could take the rural walk, and they get a whiff of pheasant, or a little bit of rabbit, or possum, or raccoon, or you know, 5-day dead crow. this is really, it's what the dog's life is all about. That years ago when I came to this country, to do research on dogs, and a lot of the research I did was on dogs' olfactory preferences, basically on the sense of smell. And very early on in my research program, I read a book, it's a science fiction book called Sirius, after the dog star, obviously, S-I-R-I-U-S. And this was why we called that puppy Sirius, and the puppy Sirius, the beagle Sirius, was why I called my puppy training company Sirius Puppy Training. Anyway, this book was about a collie, a Welsh collie, which, although he had the body of a dog, he had the mind of a human being. So he had the senses and body of a dog, but the mind of a human. And it was really insightful to me how reading this book, it changed my entire program, that I was doing research where I would, say, put down two odors for the dog to sniff, and I would watch the dog sniffing them and count how many times they peed on each odor and for how many seconds they sniffed each odor, and then I'd run statistics on it. For the dog, though, this was totally different. And I remember there's one passage in the book Sirius where Sirius explains that humans just don't understand what sniffing is all about, that the world that dogs live in is the same physical environment as us, but it's perceived absolutely differently, and largely because of the dog's different senses of vision. They can see movement much better, hearing, you have just so much better hearing than us, and smell. The whole world of smell was something else. And Sirius, this little Welsh sheepdog, was trying to explain to humans what it meant to smell the urine of an estrus bitch. And he was explaining it in human terms. And he says, it's like all the most favorite masterpieces that have ever been painted. And it's like all the smells of every flower you've ever smelt, and all in one little droplet of urine. And as I read this, I thought, I think I'm missing something here when I'm watching the dog smell urine. And of course, it's the dog's, it's the quintessence of being a dog, getting to sniff. And so let the dog sniff. Once I thought, you know, I'd like to walk around with a little water pistol with maybe some estrus urine in it. And periodically, after a nice bit of healing, I could squirt and say, good boy, sniff this. Isn't that cool? And the dog would think, God, where is that coming from? You know, my owner really knows where all these, you know, hot little dogs are. This is fantastic. Anyway, the walking is for the dog. We've got to let the dog sniff. So put sniffing on cue. And so then the dog knows that, no, when we heal, it's no sniff. What most people do is the opposite. They put the non-behavior on cue. You will hear this a lot of time. Don't pull. Don't pull. No sniff. No sniff. Off. Don't touch. And every command's a negative command. It's just so nice and once in a while to say to the dog, sniff. Go pee. Say hello. Touch. Touch with your nose. Touch with your paw. Let's shape the behavior. These are useful behaviors and fun if you want to, you know, teach dogs tricks. Anyway, so this works pretty well for most dogs, but what if we have a totally wing-batty adolescent dog that he just pulls on leash so badly. Maybe he's had no training. Maybe he's been in a shelter for a while. And now he's just, he's crazy when he sees people. He's so excited to see them. He jumps up and he just wants to go berserk. What are we going to do? Well, we would use a reward training technique. Basically, the dog has so many behaviors here that would irritate us that there's no point in giving instructions. You know, the dog's going to ignore the instructions, our instructions. The dog's not going to follow them. So just don't give them. You know, it's not going to work, so why tell the dog heel and he doesn't do it and then you get frustrated? So instead, we're going to use a technique. It has a number of names, red light, green light, one step at a time, baby steps. Basically, what you're going to do is you're going to go outside. You're going to waggle the leash, say walkie-walkies, and as I mentioned before, wait for the dog to sit. When he sits, you put the leash on. And you take one step towards the back door. The dog will go crazy when you take this one step. And that's pretty much an advertisement of what walking the dog will do. If he goes this crazy when you take one step, think of how you would have energized him if you took 10 steps. So you take one step and you stop again. You ignore everything the dog does. He can bark, he can goose you, he can circle. The only thing he can't do, of course, is hurt you. He can pull on leash, he can jump up, he can whine, he can plead, he can do whatever he likes. You wait until he sits. He will sit eventually. So the first sit always takes the longest. With this Labrador in the workshop, within 3 minutes of the first sit, he was walking nicely by my side, and he would sit automatically when I stop. So how does it work? We start off, and I would say, you know, pick up the dog's leash, activate the dog, let him go crazy. But you stand still. You're going to wait for the dog to sit. And it just takes time. It's usually going to take 30 seconds to 2 minutes. I mean, you're not going to have such extreme dogs like I've had. I mean, that's in a lifetime's experience. So your dog sits. Good boy. You give him one piece of kibble. You take one big step. When you take the one step, the dog will explode. Now, this is an advertisement for how much you can energize the dog by walking it. You know, so if you walk the dog 10 steps, imagine the energy that you would give to that dog. And so take one step, sit. You're going to wait again. This time you'll find he takes less time to sit. And when he does, good boy, give him a treat. Then you take one more step towards the back door. And you stand still, you wait for him to sit. So you're going one step, stand still, you wait for the dog to sit. Doesn't matter how long it takes, you ignore everything the dog does. When he does sit, you say, good boy, and you give him a treat. Then you open the back door, and I would take one step outside, stop again. You don't want to take two steps, because you'll energize the dog. Boom, he hits the end of the leash, off we go. You take one step, and you stop. After you've done about 6 to 8 standstills, you'll find now you take a step and you stop, the dog sits immediately. And so it goes step, sit, good boy, treat, step, sit, good boy, treat. Now try taking 2 steps. You take 2 steps and you stand still and the dog sits. Then when you can do that, go for 3 steps, then 4, then 5, and then 8, then 10, then 15. Then we're off and running. And it's quite amazing. You now walk. And as you walk, you'll find the dog's by your side, the leash is loose. If you ever want the dog's attention, you just slow down a little, and as you slow down, the dog will look up at you, and if you stop, the dog will sit. And he's learned all of this, and the only words that you've said are good dog. You didn't give any instructions, you just said to the dog, okay buddy, it's in your hands. Let's see if you can work out what to do. Let's see if you can work out how to make me walk. And when you train a dog this way, what I really like about it is because we're not giving instructions, the dog can never be wrong. He can never be accused of being bad. He can never be accused of being dominant. He's just not doing it because he hasn't worked it out yet. On the other hand, if you give instructions, you set yourself up for failure and the dog. What if he doesn't do it? So it's a wonderful training method for people because they don't get frustrated. You just watch the dog, and the dog will eventually do exactly what you want him to do. When you're outside, I would stop, at least every 25 meters or so. I mean, you've seen how much you energize the dog by taking a step. And so as many stops as possible, the more time you stop, the better behavior that you're going to have for the dog, from the dog. The more attention he's going to pay to you and the calmer he's going to be. Another tip, occasionally stop and sit down and read the newspaper or read a couple of pages from a novel. The more times you stop on a walk and settle your dog down, and of course, if you like, you can give him a stuffed chew toy, and then he has a good reason for settling down. The more times you stop on a walk and have your dog settle down so he can sort of chew and relax and he's rewarded for being calm, but he can watch the world go by, the calmer the dog will be when you get up and continue walking on leash again. Okay, it's now time for a short break. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Kong Dog Toys are praised by owners and trainers alike for quality, versatility, and durability. The world's top veterinarians have recommended the original Kong toy for over 30 years. Kong has become the training tool of choice for addressing numerous behavioral challenges, including destructive chewing, excessive barking, and separation anxiety. The key to successful Kong training is to insert healthy dog food or treats into the Kong toy to entice your dog. Look no further than Kong's Stuff and Brand Dog Treats, perfectly designed to fit Kong toys. Available wherever pet supplies are sold. Your dog will love you for it.
Walk with me and put an end to frustrating leash pulling, lunging, and jumping forever. Premier's Gentle Leader Head Collar has been delivering immediate, gentle control for years and has long been the number one recommended head collar endorsed by vets and trainers. Dogs love it because the unique design doesn't choke and eliminates any pressure on their throat. Pet owners love the Gentle Leader because it allows them to enjoy comfortable walks and a more satisfying relationship with their pet. Want to join the millions of dog owners that have found the secret to stress-free walks? Ask about Gentle Leader at your vet, trainer, or pet retailer.
From our home to your speakers, VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to iWolves with veterinarian and animal behaviorist Dr. Ian Dunbar, the pioneer of lure, reward, fun and games, dog-friendly dog training. Now back to the show.
Hi, this is Dr. Ian Dunbar, and we're back with iWolves. And we were talking about using all or none reward training techniques to get crazy dogs to walk on leash. This red light, green light, it's absolutely fantastic technique. You can actually buy, they have a video, Open Paw is a non-profit organization, and they have a set of four videos, and you'll actually see me demonstrating this technique on stage. And you can get the videos from Tawzer Dog Videos, that's T-A-W-Z-E-R, dogvideos.com. And it's just, it's such a wonderful way to train a dog, because you don't give instructions, you don't prompt the dog, you don't lure the dog, and so there's no frustration. And you can actually sit back and almost be pleased that the dog's not getting it, because, you know, the longer it takes for the dog to get it, the more the dog is learning what's not right. So, for example, if you're waiting for the dog to sit and he barks, well, he's learning that barking won't do it. Maybe it used to do it in the future, in the past, but it's not doing it now. Or the dog gooses you and he circles, he rolls over, you know, he whimpers, he whines, he raises a paw. None of this works anymore. So the longer it actually takes for the dog to sit, the happier I am about it, because the more the dog is learning. He's learning, no, these things don't work anymore. There's only one thing that will make me move, and that is when you sit. And eventually in training, it's sit and look at me. So it's an absolutely brilliant, you know, training technique. You should all try it out. Now let's talk about some management tools. There's so many, leashes and collars and halters and harnesses out there. What do I recommend? Basically, I recommend just three things. Either a collar for a dog. I really like a martingale collar, And Premier produces a beautiful, real big wide array of martingale collars. These are really nice. They're loose, but they fit snugly if ever the dog exerts any pressure on the leash. Alternatively, I like a really expensive flat leather collar. Something that is, it's the sort of thing, you know, when, horrible thing to say, but when your dog dies, you know, hopefully 15, 17 years time, you hang it up, you retire that collar. I have two of them in my office, and these were collars that were worn for a lifetime. They're special collars. And they were leather, high quality. They were just meant to look snazzy. And hold the dog's tags and to attach a leash in situations where you needed a leash for safety or for legal reasons that your dog had to be on leash. They were not designed or used to deliver any information at all. They were not correction collars or what have you. Personally, I'm not in favor of metal collars for dogs. And the reason is not because they can't be used effectively. They can in the hands of an experienced trainer. But the point is, most pet owners are novice trainers. They haven't got the skills yet. And children especially, you know, they have not got the skills, I think, to work a metal training collar. So I just don't recommend them at all in pet dog training. So the other thing I recommend is a gentle leader, some kind of halter system where you're leading the dog from the front. Now, it's very important, I think, when you use these training tools. And here I would include a leash as a training tool. I mean, remember what I said about the leash. When you connect it up or use it for the first time, don't use it right away. So when we first connect a dog up, we've done our following exercises and healing exercises off leash, and we now put the dog on leash, I don't like the leash in the owner's hands because I know they're going to undo all the training we've just done, and they're going to use that leash to tug on the dog, and the leash becomes a crutch right away. So rather than becoming a tool in training, it becomes a crutch for the life of the dog. So I like to just put the leash around their neck, to drape it over their shoulders, or to tie the leash to their belt, but it's hands off the leash. And this way, it doesn't become a crutch. Now, if you're using a more specific tool, like a halter system, there's the right way and the wrong way to use it. The wrong way is you buy this online and you get your gentle leader and you unpack it and you put it on your dog and you connect the leash to it and you go walking. That is not the way to use it, because what happens is we go walking and the dog says, hey, whoa, this is different. Boy, I can't really get my shoulders down and pull with this thing on. I don't know what it is, but there we go. So the dog has learned not don't pull. He's learned, I'm not going to pull where I'm wearing this halter. And that's not what we want. We've now created the halter as a crutch. Instead, we want to use the training tool and then phase it out. So the way we would use it is like this, that we get our gentle leader, we put it on the dog, and he may be wearing it around the house, you know, what have you. Hand feed him a few treats so he gets used to wearing it. He may find it a little irritating and scratching at it. So first he wears it around the house. Now we go on our first walk. You connect the leash to the dog's regular collar. I want the dog to get used to wearing the gentle leader. I don't want the dog to learn that it's the gentle leader that produces the effect. So for a whole week, I would walk the dog wearing the gentle leader. He wears it around the home a lot of the time, and the leash is connected to his regular collar. Then, at the end of 1 week, I would then connect the leash to the gentle leader, and now I'm going to give a different walk command. Instead of saying, Rover, go on, I'll say, Rover, proceed, or Rover, forward, or Rover, steady, and off he goes to pull, and whoa, he can't pull. But he doesn't make the connection it's the gentle leader because he's been wearing it for a week. Instead, he thinks, what's different? Well, they used a different word this time. Wow, that must be a really powerful word. When they say, Rover, proceed, I mean, that means don't pull. So now, for several weeks, we walk the dog saying, Rover, proceed, or Rover, forward, using the halter. Then, the next time we walk, We don't connect the leash to the halter. We connect it to his regular collar. And what do we find? He walks on the leash nicely. So he's still wearing the gentle leader, but it's not connected up. And then after a week of that, we don't need the gentle leader anymore. We put it in the closet and we use it for another dog, or we give it to our neighbor next door who's seen our dog learn and wants their dog to learn too. So it's very important, I think, to know how to use tools and then phase them out. What do we learn from all this? Oh, I think, you know, most importantly, put the problem on cue. You've got to teach the dog to pull on command. Last week I mentioned doing it with my dog Omaha, and that we had so much fun from then afterwards that I would go cross-country skiing, connect him up to his harness, and that was so much fun, having a big old Malamute pull you on a pair of skis. I mean, it was just absolute riot. With Phoenix, we didn't go cross-country so much with her, and so instead I taught her to pull, and walking around the block, we have one very steep bit. And so I say, Feeny, pull, and she just pulls me uphill. When you're walking, stop a lot, have the dog sit. Stop a lot for a length of time, have the dog settle down and watch the world go by. The more you stop and sit your dog, the more you have him settle down while you read a newspaper, the better he will walk on leash. Above all, I would say remember what the walk is all about. This is it's the biggest moment in your dog's life. And so be a part of it. Enjoy it. Make it a huge moment for you too. And make the walk really enjoyable. It's relaxing, but it's good exercise, and it's good psychological exercise as well as physical exercise. So please enjoy many very pleasant walks with your dog. You have been listening to Dr. Dunbar's iWoofs, the owner-friendly and dog-friendly dog training show to help you understand dog training from the dog's point of view and to learn what you can learn from your dog. iWoofs is sponsored by Premier Pet Products and by the Kong Company. So it's goodbye from me, Dr. Ian Dunbar. Goodbye from Dune. Goodbye from Claude. And goodbye from Ollie.